because in turkey diets, particularly the last 10 weeks, we have a lot of fat coming in, very high energy diets. And so, you know, really having your finger on the quality of your ingredients, as well as, you know, what your nutrient levels are, is the key, I think, to letting the intestine do what it does.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
AccuGut C.1 is a proven solution for your coccidiosis toolbox. Give those traditional tools a break and rotate to AccuGut C.1. Visit dsm-firmanich.com/AccuGut to learn more. AB Vista, intelligent nutritional solutions to boost poultry health and performance. Natural Biologics is looking deeper to find the natural solutions to your poultry health challenges. Nexus, powered by SAM, where science meets performance. Sid Lines, an Ecolab company, AV Prime program offers a broad range of cleaning and disinfection solutions combined with tailored advice to improve hygiene on your farm or hatchery.
So this is Phil Stair interviewing Dr. Michael Lilburn and with PoultryCast with Wisenetics. And Dr. Lilburn is, retired now, but he calls himself retired part-time nutrition consultant and been at the Ohio State for many years. And so, Dr. Lilburn, if you would, maybe give us some background about yourself. You've stopped working there at the Ohio State, but you're still working, sounds like.
Yeah, my background, basically, like a lot of undergraduates, I wanted to go to vet school. Good, but not a great student. And I had an opportunity to work my senior year in college in the lab of Dr. Roland Leach at Penn State. And always interested in nutrition, particularly animal nutrition. Dr. Leach is best known as the biochemical nutritionist. He was the first to describe the actual biochemical mechanisms by which manganese caused porosis. So, I got a master's and a PhD with Dr. Leach. That was my introduction to poultry. And then I spent 2 years as a postdoc with Leo Jensen at Georgia. Always was interested in academia, no positions open, so I took a job with Hubbard Farms. I'm from New England originally, so it's a chance to move back north. And that really was a very fortuitous decision because I spent 5 years in the industry, really got an appreciation for the industry and made a lot of contacts. A lot of people my age at that time coming into the industry who became lifelong friends. And so I was doing a lot more traveling than I wanted to, so the opportunity to come to Ohio State, I was at their Agricultural Research Center in Worcester, Ohio. And I went from doing a lot of broiler breeder work, evolved into working with turkeys, because we really had quite a layer in the turkey industry in Ohio. So I've been here 32 years, doing a lot of basic work, but a lot of that work being applied to my interest in the commercial world because I had 5 years experience. One of the things I have to mention is for the last 15 years of my career, I did a lot of field nutrition work with Virginia Poultry Growers Cooperative in Virginia, working with their consulting nutrition company, first Aiki, then Provimi, then Cargill, now CSA. But I would go down every 6 or 7 weeks, walk turkey houses with the co-op, and really got an appreciation for on the ground, so to speak, of turkey houses. And I need to give a shout out here to Danny and Brian Branson, who were the live production guys at the co-op, who are two of the best in the industry and really taught me an awful lot about the inside of a turkey house. So that was kind of my basic training, but also my real love of getting in the field.
A worldwide leader in animal nutrition, Adiseo's portfolio of products includes methionine, the full range of vitamins, enzymes, organic selenium, probiotics, mycotoxin management strategies, and palatability products. With such a diverse offering, Adiseo supports its customers with a broad range of expertise, tools, and services to help them maintain a competitive advantage. Adiseo, fueling predictable profits. To learn more, visit Adiseo at www.adiseo.com.
Talking talked about basic and applied. Can you give us some examples of what your basic research and how it worked, the actual application in the field?
Well, you know, it's essentially seeing what's happening in the field, okay? You can put a diet together that looks really, really good on paper. But, you know, what goes in one end often comes out the other end of a bird in a different form, which again gives you the questions to ask, what is it? Certainly in commercial poultry nutrition, where operations are getting bigger, ingredients are coming in by the train load. We often don't have the opportunity to reject loads that come in. Times of the year in Virginia, we had access to wheat being on the East Coast. Of course, the last 10 years, we had a lot of distillers grains coming out of the ethanol movement. Not all distillers grains are the same. Know your plant. And so basically, I spent a lot of my time, a lot of my research efforts studying intestinal physiology. A lot of my students working on basic aspects of intestinal physiology, but also skeletal growth. I realized in the turkey industry that our first study actually was with Keith Turner, 1992, some skeletal work. And to that point, there is very, very little data in the literature, if any, for instance, on the femur. Everybody used the tibia. And in 1992, the only weekly skeletal data I could get was a 1993 paper from Tommy Sullivan out of Nebraska. So we really started doing an awful lot of work with the femur, because basically the femur is what connects that body, which is really what geneticists are improving, with the lower skeletal axis. So we've done an awful lot of basic skeletal work, a lot of measurements, basically looking at the relationships between different parts of the skeleton and growth. For instance, we showed that, you know, whether it's 1992, 2005, 2019, the skeleton is essentially done growing in a growing market tom, 90% finished by 12 to 14 weeks. But in a commercial tom, that bird has not even reached 40% of its final body weight. And obviously, the body weights have increased. Breast yield has increased dramatically. The other thing is that I was very interested in was it's not just how much the bird weighs, how long the bone is, the dimensions of the bone, you know, but also conformation. I grew up in the horse world where, as a kid, where conformation was everything. And I have a number of slides I often show that, you know, basically body weight feed conversion, but as they've selected for breast yield, the conformation of the bird has changed dramatically. And our whole hypothesis is a lot of those conformational changes are what really is driving a lot of our inherent skeletal issues in turkeys.
So let me ask you on that. Is there an avenue in all these years of research of intervention, you know, as geneticists continue to improve, and I think, you know, leg health for sure in the turkeys and also in the chickens, anything nutritionally speaking that has been adjusted or needs to be adjusted to accommodate the different posture of the new genetics?
I really don't think so, Phil. I mean, there's no silver bullet in this game. You know, the only thing that you're really going to do to dramatically improve the skeletal growth and whatnot in turkeys is decrease growth 25 or 30%. And obviously I'm being facetious when I say that. I think that as welfare has become a major part of our production programs, I think that welfare certainly has improved. You know, there are different aspects of skeletal development now that the geneticists have brought into the new lines. Management, I mentioned my years walking turkey houses. Management is a critical component. I think that as the turkey industry has gone to tunnel ventilation, I think that the management of the litter 12 months a year, it used to be, you know, the fall and the spring were the toughest times of the year to manage because you're going into cold weather, you're coming out of cold weather, you know, and how do you manage a house without tunnel ventilation? So I think our management improvements, I think that our poult quality, a lot of attention being paid to that. I think those are really the secrets. I don't really think there's any bullet to improving skeletal health per se. Gut health is obviously the two buzzwords now. In all of poultry nutrition, gut health is not going to be improved, in my personal opinion, I'll tell you what I tell students in class. You will be privy this morning to Mike's opinions. You never have to assume any of them, okay? But as our technology has improved, molecular biology has improved, there are so many more things that we can measure in the intestine. And they're all valid measurements. However, those are responses to an exogenous diet. And so all the molecular biology in the world has to relate back to the makeup and the digestive physiology of the bird.
And so in terms of what you've studied through these years in nutrition, nutritional inputs, of course, there's pathogens, and I think we're losing more tools than gaining as a veterinarian. That's something that we have frustration with. But as a nutritionist, have you seen, whether it's feed ingredients themselves or non-nutritive feed additives, things that would actually impact gut health? You know, antibiotics, I think, you know, classic, but other things you may have experienced or trialed out yourself?
Well, I think one of the biggest challenges we've had in broilers and also in particularly in turkeys is, you know, for all those years we had ionophores, we had good chemicals, anticoccidials. Those are all largely gone. The numbers of chemical anticoccidials we have, you know, is down to 3 or 4. And we need to be very, very careful about, you know, what our rotation is because, you know, turkeys become very resistant to those. We had for quite a number of years, we only had one anticoccidial vaccine. And, you know, it was largely a Canadian vaccine. Now it's in the U.S., but it only had 2 Imeria species. One of the commercial companies now has developed a new anticoccidial vaccine and actually includes 3, maybe even 4 Imeria species. And I really think that if we can get a handle on cocci, it's very, very real. And even if you have a mild case of cocci, you as a veterinarian can appreciate it may not be full-blown coccidiosis, but it can really do a tune on the intestine and intestinal health. So I think that background of having a good anticoccidial program, and if we can go back even to using ionophores and rotating ionophores with an anticoccidial vaccine, with chemicals, you know, I think it sets the platform for the intestine not having that exogenous challenge. The other thing is that I think it's gotten a lot of attention recently. Mycotoxins have been around for years. And for years, our mycotoxin program was, you know, a rapid test maybe on ingredients coming in, sending your ingredients away for analysis to a lab. I think the modern technology is showing that there is one company out there that has actual blood biomarkers, and you can actually measure the byproducts of a mycotoxin in the blood. So, for instance, if a chicken or a turkey consumes DON, it shows up at DON sulfate in the blood, different metabolite in swine, GON gluconate. So I think what's happening, particularly in Europe now, is that some of these new mycotoxins are being shown through biomarkers. And they're not new mycotoxins. One of them, tenozoic acid, is being very, very heavily researched in Europe now. And I remind people, tenozoic acid, actually Joe Jambrone at Auburn had the first paper on tenozoic acid in 1978. But it's, you know, we're not aware of it. The Alternaria species of fungi are largely not even recognized. So I think our technology now is allowing us to get a better handle via biomarkers on our mycotoxin program. And again, that's just one of those factors along with a cocci challenge that is basically setting the gut up for, I'll call it a pathogenic, even though they're not necessarily pathogens per se. But then they're setting it up for, say, what the diet is then delivering in terms of poor quality ingredients, variability in ingredients, and some of those things.
That's great. I guess when I think of turkeys, I think about a lot of turkey viral enteritis, you know, more so than chickens. You know, you talked about cocci. I think both commodity groups, that's the biggest challenge, I would say, cocci, protozoans. The mycotoxins, I think you're right, have been something that's been more recent, probably because better technology to find it.
Right.
Anything have you seen on the viral side, particularly on nutritional interventions, anything that you've seen to be a benefit?
I know what I don't know. And so we start getting into any kind of disease component. I've been fortunate to be around some really, really good veterinarians, and it's really easy for me to defer to them on these issues. I do ask them a lot of questions, but I certainly would not want to get into your domain, per se, with any degree of accuracy.
Well, I just didn't know if there's something, again, non-nutritive that maybe not, there's no antivirals, but other components, maybe, you know, feed additives that might help dry the ingesta or, you know, help the intestine heal faster. I don't know anything in your experience you've seen in particular with turkeys. I think they're very prone to viral enteritis.
I think the biggest thing that we can do is build a healthy gut. You know, there was a lot of work. Dr. Julia Dibner from Novus, who just passed away this year, really introduced us to intestinal development. And actually, some of my students back in the 90s spent time in her lab because we did quite a bit of work on developmental physiology of the intestine. Because the intestine really, whether it's a chicken or a turkey, is immature until about 10 days of age. And what most people don't realize is that not only is the intestine immature, but also the bursa. You know, the bursa takes 10 to 14 days before it's fully effective. So, you know, it's part of the intestine in terms of, you know, intestinal immunity and things. And so I think that, you know, getting birds, you know, management 101, getting birds off to a good start, having your best quality ingredients in your starting diets and things of this sort. You know, the intestine's the largest immune organ in the body. And that's about as much as I'll say about immunity. But it is, I think, accepted as the largest immune organ. So if we get it off to a really good start physiologically, we give it a chance to then deal with some of these, you know, enteritis types of issues that may come in.
So I guess in terms of, you know, one of the topics we talked about was optimizing the turkey gut health and say, you know, is that a balanced diet? You know, I think something else we talk about is, you know, marketing limitations, whether it's all veg diets, you know, is there a best balance for best optimal health?
You know, the all veggie came out of the antibiotic-free movement, okay? And, you know, some companies that were going on antibiotic-free, or then the next generation was no antibiotics ever. And so all veggie kind of came in with those two types of marketing programs. And the challenge we have in turkey specifically is that, you know, you can put together a broiler diet with a starter diet that's maybe, you know, 20-21% protein with supplemental amino acids and, you know, and get birds off to a good start. You know, in turkey, a starting diet, typically, if you look at NRC, and I'm not sure that the industry necessarily follows NRC recommendations. In fact, I know they don't. But, you know, you're at 26 or 28% crude protein and associated levels of amino acids. And when you go to an all-veggie diet, you know, you are inherently forced into using oftentimes, you know, over 50% soybean meal in the diet, okay? Soybean meal protein is very, very highly digestible. Wonderful protein source. But you also get a lot of mannan oligosaccharides and some of these complex oligosaccharides in soybean meal that when you start getting up to 50%+ inclusion, you know, if you have anything that, you know, where you don't get complete soybean meal digestibility, which includes the complex carbohydrate fraction, you'll get those complex carbohydrates that'll be getting to the lower gut. And that becomes rock candy to the bacteria down there and kind of inducing a lot of issues that, you know, you get out of balance. I think one of the additives I'm a big, big fan of is butyric acid. And one of the reasons is because, particularly if you can get butyric acid to the lower gut, it is a favored substrate for some of the real beneficial microbes in the lower gut. And by lower gut here, I'm not really talking about the colon because it's not that big in turkeys, but, you know, the lower small intestine. And so I think that, you know, butyric acid, I'm a big fan of, but just, you know, doing things to minimize some of these complex mucopolysaccharides getting down to that. But sometimes we have no choice in turkeys, you know. And particularly now with synthetic amino acids, they can help you balance a diet on paper. But synthetic amino acids are very expensive now. It's a tough time for the turkey industry in terms of diet costs. And synthetic amino acids have increased in cost quite a bit recently. Who knows what's going to happen if, you know, we have some of our vitamins and things coming over from China. And so there's a lot of these issues that really they work together. There's a couple of enzymes that I like in particular, a mannanase and a galactosidase, that really are not used extensively. But I think that if we went up to these high levels of soybean meal, we could aid digestibility of some of these complex polysaccharides, mucopolysaccharides, which could help to deal with some of this digestibility issue I just talked about. But again, I think we also need to realize that, you know, phytase has some protein digestibility components. There are some very good quality proteases on the market. So I think we need to think about enzymes other than simply taking 20 or 30 calories out of your diet, recovering your costs. We need to think of enzymes in terms of how can they facilitate some of the ingredient choices we have to make, particularly in all veggie diets for turkeys where the protein levels are so much higher. At the tail end with all veggie diets, you know, you have to use a vegetable oil. And a lot of times the vegetable oils of choice are byproduct vegetable oils. You know, corn oil coming as a byproduct from ethanol production or biodiesel. And some of the quality of these vegetable oils isn't what maybe we typically would have found in our traditional corn oil and soybean oil. So much closer attention being paid to the quality of the fats you have coming in, because in turkey diets, particularly the last 10 weeks, we have a lot of fat coming in, very high energy diets. And so, you know, really having your finger on the quality of your ingredients, as well as, you know, what your nutrient levels are, is the key, I think, to letting the intestine do what it does.
That's very, very, very good. I think you have hit a lot of contemporary issues, and I think we addressed many of the points I had written down here is to discuss. I still think about practical feeding of turkeys. It's something you've kind of started out with. But, you know, we have different avenues. We say conventional or all veg, or there's a common theme here. I guess I've heard balance. You know, you talked about quality of ingredients. I don't know if you want to address that. You talked about the volume of feed and ingredients coming in, you know, by the train load. And I guess my experience as a veterinarian, when I ask questions about feed, you know, that feed that we assess has already been fed and through the bird, and the feed sample is already gone. You know, we really can't test that. So what... to make a question out of that is how then do modern nutritionist poultry growers deal with this high volume of incoming ingredients and doing the best they can getting a quality feed?
Well, I think the term perfect world does not exist in commercial integrated poultry production. One of the things I think that is very, very important, and some of the things I'm going to be talking about are free, okay? For instance, you know, Neogen, Alltech, I don't want to leave anybody out, DSM. But these companies come out throughout the growing season with the status of a crop, okay? So, for instance, if you're in Virginia, but you're getting your train load predominantly out of the Midwest, you know, in the particular area where maybe your corn or your bean meal, well, let's not go to bean meal, but where your corn's coming from. You know, knowing what the predisposition is that year for mycotoxins, okay? You know, keeping at least up to speed on knowing where your ingredients are coming from. We mentioned distiller's grains. I think distiller's grains often get a bad rap because I think the entire industry is... often considered to be under the umbrella of, you know, a poor quality ingredient. And what I can say there is know your plant. okay? I mean, there are plants that are producing really high quality distiller's grains. So, you know your source as well as you can. You're absolutely right. When we have a problem, the feed's already gone through the birds. However, if we have a good working relationship and we're aware of what the conditions were during the given planting season, at least that gives us a heads up on what we can look for. In the turkey world anyway, and I can only speak to the few companies that I've done quite a bit of work with, is know your growers, okay? Know your housing. Going back to what I was saying earlier, is your management the best that it can be at certain times of the year? We have really lost, in my personal estimation, the real feel for management. You know, we're a numbers-driven industry. And too often we look at the numbers and we say our mortality is above average by industry standards. And but just having an above average mortality or decrease in mortality, whatever the best verbiage is.
Lower is better. Yeah, lower.
it's not necessarily represent your overall production program. The other issue which we used to have in the turkey industry, and I think all companies have been affected, but particularly the turkey industry, is our labor, okay? And I can only speak for the one company I worked with that, we used to have daily canner weights. They'd do a sample of canner weights every single day. They would do breast yield, breast muscle measurements every single day on 50 toms. Going in and coming out of COVID, we were just trying to keep the plant going. And so a lot of the information we had on variability, information we had on breast yield on a daily basis, some of this data is gone. And we look at overall industry averages. And but again, that's, as I said, it's kind of a pipe dream to have some of the tools we used to have from a number standpoint that would help gauge our, gauge what we did production-wise.
Let me interrupt there, Mike. In terms of what tools we have available now, I heard you say a couple of things that you would say would be essential. You know, some of the enzymes would be essential. You know, I think you said will butyric acid that's probably protected to get the lower gut. Something maybe you say your top two or three non-nutritives that you would say, you know, you think you need to have in the diet?
I think butyric acid, the different butyric acid products, certainly the enzymes, okay? There's probably been more research from an additive standpoint. There's probably been more research on enzymes in the last 15 or 20 years than probably any other single additive. So there is more that we know about enzymes probably than any other single additive. And so I think from a research base, we have a better, what do I want to say, better quality of applicability because you know which enzymes we're using for a particular purpose. You know, obviously we know why we have phytase. Originally it was because of phosphorus. Now we're getting into available calcium as a result of using phytase, some protein liberation, you know, protein digestibility benefits. So I think from a knowledge base, the enzymes have been the subject of quite a bit of really good quality research. The area that has a lot of promise in Europe, but Europe has a very different production system. Very different ingredient pricing, ingredient availability system than we have here. But certainly the botanicals are really, really big in Europe. And I was at Eurotier 3 years ago. And if you've ever been to Eurotier, it's like they must have 10 or 15 buildings the size of the World Trade Center in Atlanta. So imagine a trade show that's, you know, two or three times the size of the Atlanta show. And we all know how big that is. But certainly I think there are botanicals. The question is, you know, really there's not a lot of research on a lot of the botanicals in our U.S. production system, which is very, very different. And we are still a cost-driven production system here. And so I think that it's going to be a few years of people using botanicals and then communication among folks in terms of what's working. I think there's a lot of potential there. But certainly I don't know enough to certainly recommend any single family of botanicals. I would say the saponins are being used quite extensively in a couple of different products in the U.S. Effectively. So you can really classify that as a botanical. So, but I think that is an area that has a lot of potential. But certainly in most systems, they're not really cost effective today. We're still body weight and fee conversion, weight for age type of industries.
Yeah. I guess I've run across a few products myself. I think back to the old days with 3-nitro, you know, when you use arsenic in the feed. Yeah. And the new generation doesn't know what that is, but for the years I was trying to find that replacement. And I do think some of the botanicals had that opportunity. You know, 3-nitro, what it did, I think you can see some of those similar benefits in some of the currently offered botanicals. But that's great. That's great summary, Dr. Lilburn, on things to look at, the things to consider, the basics. This is exactly what Poultry Podcast wants to do. You know, Wisenetics wants to bring information to the industry. So I appreciate you bringing your years, 30 plus years at Ohio State and continuing on now, still consulting. You said you're working on some papers before we got started. What's your current research?
Yeah, well, two years ago, I was invited to write a review paper for Poultry Science during their centennial year. And so they asked me what I wanted to cover. And I said, well, obviously, Dr. Leach played a major role both as a friend and a mentor, and he was best known for his work with manganese. And so I wrote an extensive review on manganese, dedicated it to him for that centennial issue. And then Don McIntyre, a very, very good friend of mine, is working with a zinc supplier, and asked whether I would write that same type of paper on zinc, an overall review of zinc in poultry nutrition. And so that's just most recently been published. And then 2 years ago, before the zinc paper came along, I was started and I'm partway through a review on the history of skeletal development research in turkeys. Okay. And so I've gone back to it. It's probably a year away, but there's a lot of data and a lot of, how do I be kind here? There are a lot of thoughts out there, and we want to make sure that we're just aware of, is there science behind some of the dogma that we often hear? And so that's what I'm trying to do, probably a year or so away from having that finished. But it keeps me active. It keeps me engaged. And I don't do travel anymore, particularly domestic travel. And so that's the way I still stay connected.
That's great. And I do appreciate, especially your last comment, some of the, call them chicken legends or, poultry myths, things that we've always been told that, but is it really that away? And I appreciate somebody like yourself that's got the experience to speak to that. Many times I've asked questions of how do you know? Well, I was told. It'd be better to know that you know because you saw it happen. Mm-hmm. That's great. So besides writing, what else are you doing to keep busy?
Well, as I said, I have a 92-year-old mom that I'm taking care of. She lives independently. I have a very, very big market garden. This year I planted approximately 750 garlic cloves. I sell rhubarb in the spring. And I try to get out on my bike, and my wife and I are trying to do some trips and stuff in retirement. So, there's not a week that goes by where there's something I want to do that I don't get done. So I guess that's, and I'm trying to stay healthy. That's the big thing at our age is, I shouldn't say our age because you're younger than I am, but, try to stay healthy and active. And also I'm trying to be more intentional at keeping in touch with the people in the industry that have meant so much to me over the years, the good friends, because Worcester is home. It's a really nice place to live. But a lot of my community is the poultry community from well outside of Worcester. So trying to stay in touch with those folks.
It's time for our famous three.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Beringer Ingelheim. Health experts bring industry-leading knowledge and expertise to today's poultry producers to help them solve challenging health issues through smart, science-driven decision-making using the best resources available. Probiotech International. Creating the next generation of feed and water additives to improve animal nutrition, health, and well-being. Innovation is in our nature. Visit probiotech.com/EN for more information. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge. Adiseo provides nutritional solutions and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Making life easier for animals and those who care for them is the mission of Jeffo. Join the Poultry Science Association at our inaugural PSA Pacific Rim Scientific Conference, October 13th through 16th in Macau, China, to explore groundbreaking symposia and hear the latest research impacting the global poultry industry. Here is your chance to present your latest work, recruit future leaders, and network with other experts in the field. Help us shape the future of poultry science. Register now at poultryscience.org. See you in Macau.
Well, let me wrap up here. Some things I'd like to ask about on Wisenetics here, some more personal things maybe, but a favorite book related to your area of specialty was, let's say, turkey nutrition. Do you have a book or a reference that you lean on? You say Dr. Leach maybe, or?
Well, I don't know that there's a single book. I have some review papers over the years that rely on heavily, particularly in writing some of these reviews. One of the things that got me into the manganese review was the fact that I really don't like people talking about trace minerals and saying nothing's been done in the last 20 years. And all that tells me is they didn't have good mentoring. They didn't bother to go into the literature. And that's really kind of what drove me to write these reviews, because a lot of the fundamental research in any trace mineral, but particularly manganese and zinc, a lot of that fundamental research started in the early 1900s and sometimes before. And I think students today think if it's over 20 years old, it's not relevant. And the older academics like me knew what it was like when we were in grad school to have to review the literature. And I don't think the literature is really used as extensively or appreciated as much. And that'll be the end of my sermon on that. But
okay, let me. I was going to say, let's move on to your maybe favorite book or outside of the agricultural industry. Is there some reference or?
I always have a podcast going on. If it's in the car, it's usually a mystery that's over in 15 hours so that I can make sure I finish it. No particular book, that I've read. I do try to keep reading. My wife is very much involved in history, and so she usually has an historical fiction. So she usually has a good book to recommend.
There you go.
But it's there's no particular book really that stands out.
And one more question is, what would you tell maybe the less mature? I won't say we're prime, the less prime generation, the younger generation, what it takes to be a successful professional that you've seen through the years?
Well, I think one of the things is to realize you're not in the poultry business, you're in the people business. And I think that's certainly the thing that I enjoyed the most was the people component aspect of it. And then whatever your field is, or if say you're doing tech service for a product, understand all you can about your product and the science of your product. How enzymes work, just not how phytase works. How trace minerals work, just not how organic versus inorganic zinc works. Become a resource for your customers. And if you're a resource, they're always going to be happy to see you. You'll always have something new to tell them that is factually based, hopefully. But then they will see you as a resource, and that resource then becomes a friend because there's mutual respect. So, you know, that's I think just a personal guide for any industry that you're in is just, you know, that we are in the people business, and that's what's brought me a lot of my joy.
Yeah. So maybe to summarize, be kind and be competent. So know what you're talking about and say it nicely. I've had trouble with the kind part.
And also, Phil, know what you don't know.
There you go. I appreciate you starting out that. I mean, talk about nutritionists and veterinarians, the dogs and cats of the world. I've had good relationships and less good relationships through the years. And it works best when we work together. That's a good key.
Right.
But Dr. Lilburn, appreciate you taking time to talk to me at Poultry Podcast, sponsored by Wisnetics. This is Phil Stair, one of the hosts. But Dr. Lilburn, was excellent talking to you this morning. I had a great time knowing more about you, knowing more about the turkey industry. So thank you so much for your time.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent from Brazil without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.